Welcome to Mobility Month, sponsored by Red River on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now here's your host, Tom Tepper.
Smartphones have become like home health aids. All those apps for monitoring how far you walk, dispensing allergy advice, dealing with pregnancy, they all come with a risk. The Federal Trade Commission has issued guidance for mobile health app developers to help them stay in the rails of a half a dozen laws and maybe hundreds of regulations. Joining me with more, Cora Hahn, an attorney in the FTC's Division of Privacy and Identity Protection. Ms. Hahn, great to have you on.
Thanks. I'm delighted to be here.
What can go wrong with these apps? It seems like a fairly straightforward thing to count somebody's steps.
Well, some of the apps, I think, might be sharing information that it collects from consumers with third parties that consumers might not expect. Consumers might not know that's happening, and that can be a cause of concern for consumers. And then generally, we as well as HHS and FDA have all gotten questions from mobile health app developers about what laws might apply to their mobile health app. And so as a result of that, we coordinated and created a tool that will help app developers try to figure out what of certain federal laws might apply to their app.
All right, let me give you an example. I have a watch that tracks, it's a GPS watch, and it tracks how fast I run, my heart rate, and where I've been, actually every step, you know, block by block, and it uploads it to a website of the vendor. What do I have to worry about, and what do people that are developing that website, which is also an app, what do they have to worry about?
Sure. The first part of our tool, I think the one developed in collaboration with other agencies, would help that app developer figure out sort of what federal laws might apply to their app. And then each agency has also linked out to useful information about further information about the laws that and the requirements that might apply and how to comply with them. So to answer that question, that app, for example, might well be governed by the FTC. Section 5 authority under the FTC Act, and therefore would have to, that app developer would have to make sure that it does not engage in unfair or deceptive acts or practices. So we also released some best practices guidance for health app developers to help comply with the FTC Act, and that guidance gives a lot of tips to health app developers about things that they should do to help them comply and to create and build in privacy and security into their apps. And those types of things include things like, you know, be transparent with your users about what information your app is collecting and how you're sharing that information. Don't collect more information than you need to collect, and keep your keep that data secure with a number of different tips along those lines. And so those are some of the, I think, concerns and tools to help app developers combat those concerns.
So basically, they should follow the same regulations they would follow if they had, say, a credit card account, only in this case, the account has much more about you than your credit card information.
It's a different, depending on the app, I would say that there are different types of information collected. But I would also say that for banking apps and for financial apps, there may be, for example, other types of regulations that apply. And we are talking about the regulations that might apply to health apps. And specifically in the situation that you raised, an app that would be covered by the FTC Act.
What are some of the pieces of information that you see apps in the health area actually collecting that could be problematic?
Right. There is a wide variety of information that they could be collecting, and that ranges from the steps you take to your diet information to your weight. Some apps connect with fitness monitors and other types of devices like glucose monitors that may collect that sort of information. There may be additional health information in the form of your health records as more and more health information is put in online health records, and consumers are able to access that information and then interact with it to improve their health. So there is a wide range of information, some of it really quite sensitive.
So I guess the main challenge is making sure that people know what information is being collected, and that when it's collected at a website, which is where all the stuff ends up, that that has to be kept secure?
I think those are definitely some of the biggest concerns. That information can be collected through a website, or it could be collected through an app. And I think keeping that information secure is a very significant concern, as are the privacy considerations involved. So making sure that consumers know how their information is being collected and shared with others, I think, is also a significant concern.
We're speaking with Cora Hahn. She's an attorney in the FTC's Division of Privacy and Identity Protection. And are there any horror stories that have happened so far in this whole area?
Well, I think occasionally you will definitely see in the news about there being information collected by one of these connected health fitness devices, for example, being shared, or security concern. And I think that those are definitely things that we need to watch out for. And hopefully the tools that we have provided will help app developers keep their apps secure and keep more events like that from happening.
Well, tell us how the tool works. A website, I presume, and then what happens when a developer visits that site?
Sure. Well, the tool is really meant as a starting point to help app developers figure out what federal laws might apply. Because as I mentioned before, all the agencies got a number of questions about, does HIPAA apply to me? Does the FTC Act apply? Does the FD&C Act apply? And so through a series of high-level prompts and questions, the tool helps app developers figure out which of certain federal laws might apply to their app, and it may be more than one of those. And then the tool links out to additional information about those laws and how to comply with those laws on each of the agency's website. So I mentioned our FTC best practices guidance before, but to give another example, the Office for Civil Rights, which enforces HIPAA, also links out to additional information on their website about HIPAA and how to comply.
Because I was looking at the Apple health apps, and there's hundreds of them available on that just that one app store. And so there must be thousands out there. How do you make sure that most of them are compliant?
Well, so we give them tools such as the ones that we've just developed, and then through our different enforcement mechanisms, we help in that regard too. So,
sure. Now, if an app gives, say, bad advice about allergies or pregnancy or something like that, would that then be the purview of the FDA, and would FTC maybe collaborate in some sense with the FDA when something in that area of bad advice or bad medicine might come up?
Well, we certainly coordinate with both FDA and HHS wherever it makes sense to do so. But the FTC has also taken action against mobile app developers that fail to have proper substantiation for the claims they make about what their app can do.
All right. So getting back to the privacy and data sharing issues and the fences around that, what is the biggest mistake that you find that app developers tend to make?
I think that one of the biggest risks, particularly for smaller app developers, is that they don't think about privacy and security considerations at the start, and they don't build them into their products from the get-go. So, for example, they might not think about security protections until they've rolled out their product and have a problem happen, whereas there are certain low-cost, readily available measures that they could build into their apps to kind of prevent anything problematic from happening. And similarly, on the privacy front, we want app developers to think about privacy protections from the get-go. So think about making sure their settings and their privacy defaults are privacy protective, as well as making sure that they are being honest and transparent with their users about how they are collecting, using, and sharing their information.
I guess a big danger too that we haven't talked about is the inter-app sharing. Suppose you have, I don't know, a CVS app, if there is such a thing, you wouldn't want medical information gathered from another app sent over to a drugstore. The next thing you know, they're trying to sell you something.
Yes, I think that is also a concern. I mean, I think certainly the sharing of information, with other third parties, and it could be pharmacies or others, is a potential cause for concern, particularly when consumers don't know that it's happening and don't have the ability to make informed choices about their health information.
Cora Hahn is an attorney in the FTC's Division of Privacy and Identity Protection. Thanks so much for joining me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You can read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin. It's a wonder we still call them smartphones. A better word might be multi-mode instruments with a phone built in. For the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, phones built in magnetometers offer the possibility of having scientific measurement everywhere. To explain what they're up to, Dr. Manoj Nair, geomagnetism scientist at NOAA's National Geospatial Data Center. Dr. Nair, great to have you on.
Thank you.
So first of all, tell us a little bit about what happens at the data center, magnetometers and magnetic fields of the Earth, apparently pretty important there.
Right. As you all know, probably we live in a giant magnetic field of the Earth, and it has been used forever for navigation purpose, basically the compass point to the north because of the magnetic field of the Earth. But at the National Center for Environmental Information in Boulder, we monitor the change in the magnetic field constantly using satellites and ship-borne data. And we use that data to derive mathematical models that track the time and location, the space-time changes of the magnetic field. That's our primary job here.
Now, I didn't realize phones have magnetic devices in them. Are they actually magnetic, or is it some kind of digital derivation?
Oh, they actually have very tiny magnetometers. They are actually magnetometers in the phone. They are inbuilt into the electronic circuitry in the phone. What it does is that it measures the magnetic field strength along three directions so that when you hold the phone knows which direction you are pointing to.
And so how can these be used in NOAA's work, in the National Geophysical Data Center's work?
Excellent question. I think this is one of the driving question for this CrowdNR project was, as you know, that as for any science studies, we have data, but not enough data, right? So there are gaps in data collection, whether it's by satellites or it's by ship or it's by an aircraft, there are gaps in the data, both in time and space. So we were wondering, can we use this less accurate magnetometers within the phone? But then you have an advantage that you have much larger number of phones around. Can we use that and use this in a crowdsourcing project and then try to find a smart way to minimize the noise and then finally use this data for our own studies for understanding the Earth's magnetic field?
And you mentioned, of course, the phone-based magnetometers are not as accurate as the real scientific instruments and the satellites. So would the changes be big enough that might occur in the magnetic field that they would be producing useful data from a phone?
Right. To give an example, a science quality magnetometer can measure magnetic field to an accuracy of 1 nanotesla, that is 10 to the power of minus 9 tesla. It's a very small number. But when you consider the Earth's magnetic field is about 60,000 nanotesla, that's a good enough number. But when you look at the phone's magnetometer, the accuracy is quite different from device to device, but it kind of range from between 100 to 1,000 nanotesla. Now, is part of the geomagnetic variations, which are very small, that due to currents in the Earth's atmosphere, cannot be detected by these phones because they are very small. So you have to have a sense quality magnetometer. But on the other hand, the larger features of the Earth's geomagnetic field, that means there's magnetic fields value ranges from about 25,000 nanotesla at the Earth's equator region all the way to 70,000 at the polar region. So that type of large variation can certainly be captured by a phone.
Dr. Manoj Nair is a geomagnetism scientist at NOAA's National Geophysical Data Center. I'm Tom Temin. We're speaking with Dr. Manoj Nair. He's a geomagnetism scientist at NOAA's National Geophysical Data Center. And so how do you envision operationalizing this such that you can get this data from smartphone users all over the world?
This is already operationalized. We started this project in the initial planning started by NOAA in 2014, and we released the applications for Android and iOS by late 2014. And so far, we have about 10,000 users around the world using this app, sending about 30,000 data points per day. And this data are collected in real time here, right here in Boulder. We do an initial quality control checkup to make sure that, you know, you're not putting the phone near, you know, your keychain or a large magnetic material. We know that by comparing the measurement against a model of the magnetic field of the Earth. And then we display the data back to the users either through the mobile phone or also through a web interface. And we also periodically take this large data and process and create magnetic maps. So we are in the beginning process of that.
Now, my question is, phones must be just fountains of induction current sources because of the displays and the ringing and all the things that have current in the phone besides this magnetometer. How do you level for all of the inducted current that might cause funny measurements?
That's another good question. Right now, we don't do any correction for that. It's incredibly difficult to model or understand all the currents going on in the electric circuitry within the phone. So that's why I told previously that the accuracy of the phone ranges between 100 and 1,000 nanotesla. That already includes these currents in the system. So, but one way to do that would be to use multiple observations from different devices in the same place. So in some ways, in that way, you can reduce, you have two types of noises coming out of this process. One is called a random error. That means it behaves a normal distribution. And there's also bias error between phones. So these two errors are in part due to what you told, these currents within the phone. So the only way to tackle these two is by having a large number of phones at the same time measuring magnetic field data. But we don't do any corrections for the currents within the phone.
Now, the Earth is a big place, and there's not too many smartphones in the middle of the Indian Ocean or the Pacific Ocean or in Antarctica. And so, but there's millions of them just in Manhattan alone. How do you address the distribution question so that you get data where you want it to come from?
I think we already do that in science quality measurements. For example, the science quality geomagnetic observatories, by the way, some of them started back in 1800s, I mean 18th century. But they are very sparsely distributed. So the mathematical model development based on these observatories, which just sparsely distributed, mostly over continental region, and again mostly concentrated on the developed part of the world, like developed nations of the world, like Europe or North America. So this is something we already figured out. So to how to account for the lack of observations in the above the ocean region. But on the other hand, as you told, this large concentration of fauns in populated regions like the middle of a city would give us actually another opportunity. This is something which we are now actively pursuing, is that in addition to measuring the Earth's magnetic field produced by the natural sources, can this large density city measurement, which includes the noise from, for example, from an electric transformer or a buried pipe, can they be used to create a urban magnetic fingerprint? We don't have an answer yet, but if that is possible, then we can use this high concentration places and create such maps.
And are you still signing up people that want to join in the great measurement?
Sure. These apps are open and it's available at Android and iTunes. Just search for CrowdMag and it's free. And yes, we are actively promoting and actively reaching out to citizen scientists and schools and other communities to participate in this program.
Dr. Manoj Nair is a geomagnetism scientist at NOAA's National Geophysical Data Center. Thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you. It's my pleasure.
You can read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends. I'm Tom Temin.